This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Eric Strucco joins me live in studio for part two of our conversation that we started on Friday. Eric, of course, is a member of the Albemarle County School Board. And you came in Friday with this long list of things you wanted to talk about, and we spent the whole time talking about those new dugouts.
That's right.
Which was a great conversation. And we enjoyed that, and it looks like they are a go. But we have a lot of stuff left that we want to discuss. And the first thing I'd like to bring up with you is, Eric, recently I had Sean Cudahy on the program. He is the outgoing editor of the school newspaper at Albemarle High School. And he was the one that okayed the publication of the editorial that was critical of the required PE classes and suggested that one way the school board might want to cut back on some money was the number of PE teachers and number of required PE classes at the high school. And he was telling us how the administration basically came in and said, we're not going to let you, you know, distribute that. They had already printed it, but said, we're not going to let you distribute that. And they had to do a new newspaper and cut that out. Did any of that ever get up to the school board level?
No, it didn't. That was a decision that was made at the Albemarle High School level. The principal and some of the key faculty people, I believe the paper, newspaper's advisor, made the decision, to not publish, that final edition. So that issue never made it to the school board.
Yeah. And, I guess this kind of thing comes up with schools. I mean, you hear about these cases all over the country with, you know, students' right to free speech is, you know, there's a framework to work within, just like there would be on a you know, when you're on your job.
Right. And I think the principal and the faculty members involved in that decision felt that they were making the best decision for all the interested parties at that time. I'm not sure how they think now, and I have every confidence that the administration and the school can work that issue out. I personally think it was just a simple unfortunate incident. I think our public schools and our system and our processes can certainly withstand any kind of scrutiny or any kind of criticism, and we can justify the decisions that we make. And you know, I personally have no problem with anybody publishing their opinion, and I think that people also have a right to respond to that opinion and make their case if they believe in something, you know, that's an alternative to the opinion expressed originally.
Yeah. I think one thing we could all agree on is that the action that the administration took gave that story legs that it would otherwise not have had. And had they just run the story, we would probably never have heard of that.
So this individual school board member agrees.
We're talking with Eric Strucco of the Albemarle County School Board. The phone lines are open, 977-1070. Eric, let's talk about the relationship between the school board and the county board of supervisors. I find this really fascinating. There was an article recently in the Daily Progress about this very subject vis-a-vis the budget and how that works. So just share with us your thoughts on this topic, and we'll invite listeners to join the conversation and share their thoughts as well.
Sure. So once again, I want to make sure that everybody understands I'm speaking on behalf of myself. I am the vice chair of the school board. Our chair is Ronnie Price. We are a body that works very cooperatively together, frankly. I don't know when we've ever had a significant number of split votes. We usually move in unison. And when it comes to relations with the Board of Supervisors, we like to think that we can approach them as a unified body. But the reality is each one of us has our own views. We also have personal relationships with the supervisors. The school board's an independently elected body, as is the Board of Supervisors. We are split up by the same magisterial districts that the supervisors are. So I represent Samuel Miller on the school board, and Dwayne Snow represents Samuel Miller on the Board of Supervisors. We just do it in two different capacities. One, obviously, school board. One is Board of Supervisors. The school board also, I believe, has the advantage of an at-large member. So your previous guest, Brian Wheeler, serves as the at-large member of the school board, and he represents the entire county, including the Samuel Miller district. So we have an odd number. We have 7 members of the school board. The Board of Supervisors has 6, and when it comes to just elections, that's really the only difference. And so, the the school board is tasked with running the school system, and that includes putting together a budget, and we have expenditure authority, but we don't have appropriation authority. That comes from the Board of Supervisors. So the Board of Supervisors, in my phrase is, they have the power of the purse. They determine how much the public schools can have out of the county coffers, and that's really it. The school board then takes that allotment and prioritizes it and allocates it to those things that we think we need to spend on to keep our schools world class.
Yeah. So legally, then, the charge before the school board is to decide how the money is spent, and the Board of Supervisors decide how much overall money goes into the school board budget.
Out of the county's share of our budget. So we get money from the state and federal government as well. But the lion's share comes from Albemarle County.
Yeah.
And we have to submit a budget just like any state agency. The school system submits a budget. The superintendent, Pam Moran, and her staff work with us to piece together a spending plan. It's a 12-month representation of a longer-term strategy, and it's the resources we need within that 12 months to achieve our goals and, again, that longer-term strategy. This past year, it got contentious, as you can imagine. The tax revenues from Albemarle County were going to go down if the tax rate stayed the same. Property values shrunk. And we were looking at significant dollar cuts. And so each school board member, I know I did, I approached my corresponding member of the Board of Supervisors, and I talked to a number of others as well, getting a feel for what the sentiment would be regarding the tax rate. And what the school board was advocating throughout the year is really to hold taxes the same next year as they were this year, which means an increase in the rate, a few pennies, to account for the reduction in property values.
But not an increase in the tax that's paid.
Correct. The tax bill would be the same. So the average household will pay the same amount. That's what we were relying on, really. We really thought the reduction in spending would come at the state level. And that's where the rumblings were ominous, that we were looking at significant dollar cuts from the General Assembly. And so when we looked at our spending plan, we thought, okay, we know we're going to get, well, we think we're going to get the same amount from Albemarle County, but we have to realize in our budget these reductions we anticipate from the state. So the school system really put together a list of significant cuts. We were even looking at furlough days for our teachers.
We're talking with Eric Strucker of the Albemarle County School Board. The phone lines are open, 977-1070. Take us behind the scenes at those meetings where you do come up with this list because, you know, like it or not, there's a lot of people in the county who think that you didn't make enough cuts and you don't make enough cuts, and they just sort of believe that there's already so much fat there that you perhaps don't see. Take us behind the scenes and tell us about those meetings where you were really, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but where you were making significant cuts in the existing budget.
Yeah, no, these meetings are long meetings, late hours, with a lot of materials and in a lot of detail. It's easy for people to say, oh, the school system is got waste. There's always waste. So just cut the waste and that's easy, or cut the fat, or you're just spending too much. It's almost irresponsible to make those claims if you can't quickly follow up and say, and these are the areas where I think that the waste is. Some people say, oh, just cut central office. I challenge them. That's getting there. I mean, you're honing in on a specific area, but go even deeper. Where in the central office would you like us to cut? We think that we need, you know, at least a minimum administrative staff to run a school system that involves 13,000 children in 26 different buildings.
One of the biggest in the state, right?
It's a significant, right. It's a significant school system. I mean, we have three high schools and the same middle schools and a number of elementary schools sprinkled throughout a 720-square-mile county, I believe it is, 726 square miles. I mean, we went into detail in our budgeting, and in order for us to really be able to accommodate the cuts that we thought were coming from Richmond, I mean, we were looking at increasing class sizes on average by one student. We were looking at reducing the number of teachers. We were looking at reducing a number of education materials, and that's the technology, the textbooks, and other materials that are in the classroom day in and day out. We actually scaled back on those. Even then, we couldn't really get to where we thought we needed to be. We even accelerated the decision-making process on changing the schedules of the high school. So we actually added the burden on our teachers to teach an additional class. And we were looking at all these details, and we thought, all right, this will get us to a point where we think we can make the budget work, but if Richmond comes in the way they think they're going to come in, then we may be looking at furlough days. So we would just shut the school system down for a week. No one would get paid. No electric bills would be incurred.
Kids don't go to school.
Don't go to school. I mean, that was a way of saving money as well.
And that's not a scare tactic that the board uses to scare people into action in the electorate. I mean, that is really an option that you're forced to consider when your budget looks so bleak.
The last thing the school board wants to do is shut down the schools. I mean, that's exactly right. We were looking at the financial realities head on. We made some efficiency decisions. Like I said, changing the schedule is something that we could do in good times and in tough times. And that's something that we made a decision on pretty quickly because we're in tough times. We also looked at transportation efficiencies. We saved over $1 million, $1.5 million, if I remember correctly, on just looking at the bus routes and looking at just reconfiguring them so they made sense, and also looking at fuel consumption. So we looked at operational efficiencies that really you should be doing anyway in any year, but then we looked at the real cost cutting that we felt went deep and really threatened the quality of education that the county comes to expect. But we thought, we could weather the storm for a year. Hopefully the economy will continue, coming back however slowly. And then next year we can look at restoring things. So that's where we were. What really surprised us was when the Board of Supervisors, without really getting all the information back from Richmond where we could get a sense as to what the financial picture would be there, decided to vote and voted on advertising a tax rate that kept the tax rate the same, which means it would have been less money coming into the county because of the lower property values. That shocked us. That we thought, these are Board of Supervisor members that have told us in one-on-one meetings that they would consider increasing the rate so the taxes would be held harmless on county citizens. Well, what they ended up doing was voting to advertise the existing rate, which meant lower tax revenues, which meant that the schools would suddenly have to cut more. After all the dust settled, after the General Assembly got done with its work, the school system had to absorb $6 million in cuts. $4 million of that six came from Albemarle County. $2 million came from Richmond.
But the $2 million from Richmond was much less than what you were expecting would have been cut.
Expecting about $8 million.
Yeah, yeah.
So they, instead of cutting eight, they cut two.
And truth be told, that could still happen from Richmond.
Well, I already know. We already know that some of the monies that we're getting this year from Richmond will not be there next year because it's one-time money.
Yeah.
And we weren't going to fund recurring operations with some of the one-time money. But it surprised the school board that the real area that hurt us financially the most was our own jurisdiction, Albemarle County. And so that began the tenseness between the two bodies.
Between the school board and the Board of Supervisors.
Right. And, I was even quoted in the paper and here on this radio station saying, geez, we felt like we were under assault by the Board of Supervisors here. It was a surprising move for us to see them vote to advertise that lower tax rate. And so we got hurt mostly by less dollars coming in from Albemarle County. And so here we are. The reality of it is we're in the situation right now where I don't know what property values are going to do next year, Coy. They could go down again. Are we going to continue with the same rate, and does the school system have to absorb more cuts? We already know the one-time money in Richmond is going to go away, and I'm not sure the General Assembly is in a position to say, well, no, we'll restore that. We expect, I don't know what to expect from Richmond, frankly, but let's just assume that they're going to continue on the same path that they were on this year. How are the school systems going to absorb these impending reductions, and we're left with very few options. And this is where it gets, you know, really delicate. And the only way we can continue to preserve the quality of education inside the classroom is perhaps to look at consolidating some of the schools itself. We'll keep the classroom, you know, we'll protect that, but that classroom may exist in a school that has more children in it. And that's just a reality. Last summer at this time...
Because it's cheaper to heat and cool and provide electricity to one school than two.
Correct. I mean, you're pulling two buildings into one. Now, last year at this time, the big controversial issue before the county was the consolidation of the three small elementary schools in the southern part of the county. So Red Hill, Scottsville, and Yancey Elementary Schools. There was a proposal to close all three and have them move into or become one big elementary school. Each one of those small elementary schools has roughly 200 or less than 200 students. So you can create one big elementary school.
And how does that compare to other elementary schools like Meriwether or, you know?
Meriwether has you're going to test me on my knowledge and numbers. I'll say roughly 400 students.
Okay. So these are really small elementary schools.
Right.
Apples to apples here.
So you can get maybe a 500, 600 student elementary school. We have some that have capacity to go up to 700. So Cale and Brownsville. That was a proposal. And when the school board, this was before I was on the school board, actually, last summer, decided not to consolidate those three elementary schools, mostly on the pleading of members of the Board of Supervisors, Lindsay Doyer. Dwayne Snow, in his campaign, when he was running for supervisor, said the schools were important, and he supported keeping the three elementary schools open. So if the monies don't materialize next year, those small elementary schools are squarely back on the table. And if we don't get the necessary funding from the Board of Supervisors next year, I mean, the school board will be forced to consider closing the small elementary schools. That's something I do not want to do. I mean, I think
I don't think there's anybody on the school board who is, like, eager to do this, right?
I mean, it depends. I mean, I think there are some that want to consider the thought that, you know, it's just, does it make economic sense to run small elementary schools? Others look at some statistics and say, well, where is bullying more prevalent, or where do how are test scores impacted, or what about the scope of classes that you can offer at a small elementary school versus a larger one? Perhaps there's more opportunity in a larger one. So I do think that there are some members of the school board that take those things into consideration. But the decision that came out of last year was, no, these schools are important to the county. They're important to the immediate communities around them. Some have history. Yancey has a rich history. It's with the African-American population around it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we felt that, no, given the comments from the members of the Board of Supervisors, we thought, yeah, then we'll have the funding to keep them open. Well, that was in the summer. By the time January and February rolled around, it was a different story. So, unfortunately, we have to consider looking at shutting down schools. In fact, the Washington Post just ran a story, either was today or yesterday, that Fairfax County had to close one of its small elementary schools, much to the dismay of a lot of the parents and residents there. And it was a tough decision. And Fairfax and other communities are also experienced this tension between school boards and boards of supervisors. And these are the tough decisions that are on the table.
We are talking with Eric Strucco, the vice chair of the Albemarle County School Board. The phone lines are open if you got a comment or a question at 977-1070. So how does all of this take us now from this discussion into the relationship between the school board and the Board of Supervisors? Where do they meet? Where do they intersect?
It's an ongoing relationship, or it really should be. I know that as the two leaders of the school board, Ronnie Price and myself, firmly believe that we need to have the budget discussions begin significantly earlier than what they traditionally do. We want to talk over the summer. We wanted to have conversations this month, next month, September, going into the beginning of the school year, about what we should expect in terms of funding. We can make our arguments about the level of support that we need from the Board of Supervisors. you know, the board, we've been having this argument in the press. So members of the Board of Supervisors have said, well, the school board isn't forthcoming with information. We don't have the detail we need. The school board members push back saying, my God, the budget is a binder that's at least 2.5 inches thick, fraught with detail. Please take the time to read it. And if you look through it, you will get a clear understanding as to where our priorities are and where we want to dedicate these taxpayer resources.
So you're saying, what details don't you have?
What details don't you have? Exactly. Yeah. I think that we can go back and forth in this argument until we're blue in the face. But what we really need to do is take a constructive next step. And I really appreciate Ron Price's gestures to the Board of Supervisors. He's attempting to extend the hand of cooperation, and we'll be willing to sit down with the Board of Supervisors and go and spend as long as we need to spend, hours if necessary, sifting through the budget materials so they see exactly where we want to dedicate resources. So there's a clear understanding going into the budget process in the winter. Where we both stand. And then it becomes a matter of, all right, do you support the public schools to this level or do you not? I think the supervisors really need to take a hard look at the entire county budget and say, you know, look at it in terms of, we're going to dedicate this much for the schools, this much for public safety, this much for social services and community development. But then also look within each one. In order for each one of these agencies and entities to do their work effectively and reflect the values of the county, then the dollar amounts have to also be high enough in order to run an effective operation. And again, I think that's really where the issue is.
Eric Strucco is vice chair of the Albemarle County School Board. Eric, thank you so much for being here.
You're very welcome. Anytime, Corey.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.